Hello and welcome once again to the AFA Podcast, the official podcast for animationforadults.com. Thank you everyone for joining us for episode 91. This is going to be a very special episode for us to cover today because it is going to be focusing on the discussion of The Breadwinner, a film that just came out this past Friday, directed by Nora Toomey, created by Cartoon Saloon and officially produced by G-Kids Films. We had the opportunity to see it, and both myself, Chris, Yvonne, and Dan were able to get together and have a discussion in regards to our thoughts on the film, and just wanted to be able to share that with you guys today, so we'll get right to it.
When I was young, Padawana, I knew what peace felt like. Stories remain in our hearts even when all else is gone. Padawana, were you listening at all?
Yes, Papa.
Why is this girl not at home? She should cover herself properly.
Maybe you should stop looking at her.
I can have you killed!
I think business will pick up.
If there are women present, cover yourself now!
Where is he being taken?
To prison.
Papa! It'll be all right.
So we're going to move right along, and we're going to go into our main topic for the day, which is Noa Tomei's The Breadwinner. Since we've all had an opportunity to watch it, we're very excited to talk about it. Yvonne, I believe you went and actually were able to see this in a panel. So look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. So you want to start us off with talking about the panel?
Yeah, actually, it wasn't a panel. It was an invitational industry screening.
Sorry.
No, there wasn't, but it was great. It was a nice little space. The Magna Theater around 42nd Street was really great. I've been there before. It's a cozy little spot. Anyway, yeah, beautiful film, and I'm actually working on the post now. Should have that to you guys soon. But, yeah, really beautiful film. I mean, I have my own sort of thoughts about the themes that I see running through it. It's a pared-down version of a story that was actually for middle schoolers. It's part of a three-part trilogy. And I read part of that as well. I haven't finished the second two books, but that's worth picking up as well.
Yeah, do you want to share your thoughts on that before we move on to the film?
It's difficult to put down once you pick up the book. It's a worthwhile read for everyone, especially young girls. But really, it's just worthwhile. Terrific character development, and they don't spend too much time sort of talking a lot of it's not very visually descriptive, which is interesting. It's an interesting adaption, honestly, to compare the two the source material with the film, because there are some departures from the original text, obviously, but I really love what Cartoon Saloon did with this story, and sort of the integration of it became sort of a different type of story about story, which also incorporated this real life events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. It was very, very tense. I know I mentioned in the previous episode of the podcast that we have up on the website, I had recently come back from the London Film Festival, and I had an opportunity to see it. Dan and I had kind of already gone over our initial thoughts of the film. But yeah, one word that I would describe the Cartoon Saloon adaptation of this story is intense. It is a very, very intense movie. When it comes, I mean, obviously it has its down moments and it has its more, kind of like just tense moments, but it's like, it almost felt like a roller coaster ride the first way through. And I did have an opportunity to, before this episode began, to have an opportunity to rewatch it. And it is interesting, to see how much, obviously it didn't feel as I wasn't gripped by, not knowing what was going to happen. But still, it was when the tense moments happened, it was still very much, edge of my seat, kind of like, ugh. Which is interesting. You'd think that with most of it on the viewing, my second viewing would be gone, but it's still there. Well, still intense.
I think the thing that's great about it is it really, I mean, it's a perfect example of how you can use animation to describe anything. So, and Cartoon Saloon is such a wonderful job of, you know, capturing. They use such natural acting moments in their animation, and then, you know, interlaced within the story is sort of that secondary tale that's done in a different style. And, and that's much more fantastic, you know. So you have these two elements kind of intertwined. And although I have looked at, I haven't found too much written about it so far. I mean, I'm writing something about it. But, like, you know, you could say that maybe, you know, there are breaks in the narrative or maybe, I don't want to go into too much detail, I know, but honestly, you know, you have moments in time that are then punctuated by really, beautiful composition and coloring and, mm-hmm. you know, really natural human moments and then a fantastic story or fantastical, is that a word? Fantastic story or a tale sort of created almost on the fly within the film. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful. I loved the film. All in all, I thought it was really well done, and another beautiful film from Cartoon Saloon.
Yep, definitely.
But so very different from their other films, which is, you know,
sort of. It doesn't, but doesn't it really? It marries those elements, same kind of elements that. That like Secret of Kells sort of does as well, right?
Yeah, well, I'm really talking in quite a quite a superficial way. In the, you know, they've gone from like, oh, the fantasy everything of Mystical Island and things like that, and then it's a based in reality story, and it's drama as well. It's
I think there's drama in like Song of the Sea, but the thing that struck me the most about Breadwinner is from very early on, like, didn't feel safe.
Yeah,
and that was the new element for me, where I was really shocked at how you know, they didn't shave edges off just how brutal life was in like the day to day. I found that just really really powerful and arresting and commendable that they really followed through on a lot of it. I haven't read the book upon which it's based, but I was really quite shocked at just how brutal the world was.
Yeah, it's very honest, and I think there was just a point where you go, oh, this is a Cartoon Saloon film where people have guns, and that just seems weird.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's really true. But I don't know. It's, you know, I think in part it's because I've been, like, sort of working on, I'm thinking about it in the abstract a little bit. But yeah, no, that's true. There was a sense of sort of raw reality. But Cartoon Saloon's so good, again, with the sort of style of animation that they do, capturing those really human moments. It's it makes sense. It didn't seem like very divorced from what they generally do. You know, it's just like they're leaning heavier on reality. And then also, you know what it reminded me of? Did you guys ever hear this podcast? There was a podcast. Was it even a podcast? Maybe it was a radio show on NPR or something. Anyway, there was a story about these Girl Scouts who were able to serve. There were memories of a Girl Scout in her adulthood and in her youth. They weren't called Girl Scouts, but they survived an internment camp for years, and they did it through story and song. And it sort of reminded me of that, just in that they talk in the film, and this is where it's a little bit divorced, but not really. I mean, I don't know. They talked about sort of in the film, you know, the story in the film, at least that tale that sort of intertwined, became something that was a salve that was, you know, emboldened the characters, that helped them sort of survive a situation, you know, and then almost becomes like sort of a testament, you know, to the human spirit, and at one point even becomes kind of an incantation, right, as she's trying to survive moment to moment, and that really rings, you know, sort of loud and true to me, and I think that that is sort of what makes me want to, seems like a natural tie-in to some of their earlier movies. I think that they see the power of a story, you know, in the mythology to do that.
The way I thought that they departed from that maybe was that it wasn't tidy, like it wasn't naturally obvious,
right,
moment to moment how the story was reflecting her life or where the story was coming from, or even like, you know, in the tidiest sense, like what it was about. Like I can't actually,
okay.
Oh no, it's great, I loved it, and yeah, and actually for me that was one of the most exciting things about the film. Is that it was made so confidently that it was okay with not having, I guess like the word would be like a conceit, like, you know, at the end when the credits start rolling, you go, oh, it was about this one thing, and right, it's about like so many different things, and
right,
that for me was, yeah, one of the most exciting things about the film.
No, it's true, it wasn't tight, and it sort of followed along what was happening in life. I mean, again, it was just about, you know, using story for survival. I mean, I don't know. I'm going back to that in my mind, you know, like even in some of the most intense moments, it's like her version of the story as it's being created, the fairy tale portion that is sort of interwoven, is almost like sort of created to embolden and created, like I said, like almost as an incantation in order to push the events in reality forward, even though, you know, like what other sort of medium could you be successful at sort of showing that in? I don't know.
Yeah. Definitely, it's almost like very story. Yeah, no, you're right. You're completely right. It's, you know, it is like you're experiencing a moving storybook, which is, you know, animation is the best suited for, you know, that particular kind of narrative because it is so, intertwined with that particular brand of storytelling, which is what we were seeing.
It reminds me a little bit of I think it might be Ebert who said this about Grave of the Fireflies. He said like it's kind of more powerful because in animation it's like one step removed from reality and you're dealing with the world of ideas, and he said this of Grave of the Fireflies, that the reason the image of the little girl starving gets you is because it's the idea of a little girl who's starving. It's like more poetic, basically. And
that's interesting.
For some reason that quote like popped into my head when I was watching the film, particularly when anyone in the family was like ill or hurt. It just hurt that much more because it could have been anyone, and it wasn't like an actor portraying this thing, like an injury or an illness with makeup and, you know, everything else. It was it was like a sketch, like an idea.
You know what I love too, and it's something that was something that was sort of interjected by a cartoon saloon, and separate from the tale and the story, is the family dynamic, you know, even though they've been, you know, they're living in close quarters, but the family dynamic, and especially between the two sisters, there was just a couple of really magical moments that couldn't really... Can we go into detail? I don't know. I'm, like, holding myself back.
No, that's okay. No, I think I know what you're referring to, at least partially. So, I guess we just want to make sure we had, a, like, our voiced our, like, our, you know, general opinions. But I think I know what you're... What scene you're referring to. But it's just, you know... Yeah. Not the typical sort of scenes or, like, that you would normally see in, you know, a general film in terms of sibling relationships. It's, like, where they're almost always fighting, but we have moments where there's some understanding there.
Can we pull back the spoiler curtain, maybe? Because I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I kind of need it explicitly said.
Maybe I'm just a bad communicator. Sorry about that, everyone.
No, you're not. I just need, like,
I'm
my hand.
I'm holding myself back, yeah. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, my hand hurts through the conversation, basically.
Really liked it. No.
No, yeah, I definitely picked up on that. Chris, did you have anything to say in general, in the general scope, before we move on? Are we just going to just go ahead and let that spoiler curtain?
Well, I was just thinking how what you're saying about the family dynamic and everything, that is one way that it does feel more like Cartoon Saloon's other stuff,
yeah.
A bit. Even though, again, it just like the setting and everything, it does feel very different from their other films. But I think it is a fantastic film. I think it is it's very mature storytelling, and it's the kind of animated film that doesn't really get made in the West very often. I mean,
mm-hmm.
The things that I think to compare it to are things like In This Corner of the World and Grave of Fireflies and stuff, rather than general Western animated features. And I think this might maybe change some minds, hopefully, about the fact that, well, it's appropriate they played animation in this film, because I think, you know, it shows people animation is film. Fair enough, really. You know, this is a proper film, and we know that animation can be a proper film, but a lot of people still think, oh, animation is for kids and stuff.
Yeah,
and
you
don't want
showing this to your little ones, for sure.
This, I mean, that's something we can talk about. I think this is still a film for young audiences as well, of a certain over a certain point, not very young. Cause
yeah. Well, the books are for middle schoolers.
Middle schoolers.
How,
yeah, that would seem strange for that.
Let me ask, what is middle school? What age
that's
is that?
Below age 12.
Okay.
So.
All right.
That's a fair point.
I had a discussion with some people after the film. We pretty much reckon like around 10 is like the absolute earliest. You could not only just like show this film to kids and have them not be bored or like traumatized by it, but like for it to actually have an impact and for them to understand it. I don't think, if you're younger than 10, I don't think it's for you. So the rating that it got in the UK was a 12, which
is,
I think
it actually
it's
is
about,
a 12.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
I knew it was PG-13 in America, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be 12 or PG for us.
Yeah,
I know.
It was rated by the BBFC for the film festival.
Wow. Wow, that is quite a big deal. Cuz you know, even things a lot like Grave of Fireflies is PG, isn't it?
Yeah, and like The Wind Rises was a PG.
Mononoke's
a PG. PG-13, then
you have to do quite a lot to get like a 12 rated animation in the
UK.
I think
In This Corner of the World was a 12.
Is it? I thought it was PG. Maybe. I got my disc. Has it got rating on it? I don't know.
I think because of the stuff at the ending, maybe push it into a 12, Chris.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but I think 12 is suitable rating for this film, Breadwinner. Yes. Yeah. So it's really good. It's what I was saying.
So yeah, and to specifically go into detail why it has that rating, or specifically why, you know, we consider a very good example of mature storytelling, we're going to go ahead and lift that spoiler curtain. So if you plan on watching this movie and you would want to be surprised, then I would suggest stop listening here and then maybe jumping ahead to our water cooler discussion. But for the time being, we're going to let that spoiler curtain, we're going to let Yvonne continue with her point in regards to the two sisters and what they were, how this film demonstrated their relationship.
Great. Freedom!
sorry to hold you back there for a minute.
So they're all sort of living in one room, and the father is a teacher, the mother is a writer, and they've, you know, been the situation, but they now happen to be all living together in a really close proximity, and so within that environment, though, you know, they're having dinner together, and do you remember the joke that the sisters start teasing one another? The whole raisin mole.
Yeah.
That happens. It was great. And sort
the what? Sorry.
The mole. Oh, yeah. She's like, you have a raisin on your face. It's a mole, or something like that. And so it sort of like kicks off the, you know, relationship between them, a sister relationship. And then but in the end, like that one moment, which kind of cracked me up, but then the moment where she decides, and it's interesting, you know, in the books actually it's almost a little bit more realistic in a lot of ways, like the mother and older sister have kind of a larger part to play, whereas this film is, you know, simplified it a bit and really focused on the main character as the hero, and the mother and the sister in particular become a little bit more one-dimensional, but you know, in any case, there's less back and forth in the film. But that moment, what's different is in the film, you know, the older sister and the younger sister have a moment together where they kind of decide to cut her hair, and it's almost like an unspoken thing.
I love that scene. Together.
And it was such a beautiful moment, and that was all, you know, Cartoon Saloon, a moment that they're really great at, and really kind of, you know, yeah, it was beautiful. And
that was the scene I was trying to describe earlier without trying to give away spoiler, you know, too many spoilers. It's basically the fact that you had an unspoken moment between the two sisters where the one was making, you know, she'd already made the decision she's going to start cutting her hair.
Right.
But you just have her sister come from behind her, put her hand on her, and then just reach for the scissors. It's like, I know what you're doing. I acknowledge it. I support it. I'm going to help you.
Yeah, it was really great. It was such a great sibling moment, and to have that prefaced with the the kind of ornery stuff with the mole.
It
was perfect.
Yeah, that was perfect. Yeah,
I think the older sister was a character that, in a way, I felt for most, because in a way she was in one of the hardest situations, that she was not physically helpless. You know, she wasn't disabled or anything like that, but she was useless in the fact that there's no way she could have passed as a boy. Right. And the world that they're living in underneath the like the Taliban rule prohibits women from even going outside without a chaperone.
Right. Yeah.
The thing that, like, actually, you know, I think shook me more than anything was how, really, you know, there was nothing apart from that stopping the older sister from helping. But that was such a huge thing that stood in the way of their lives. It kind of defined their relationship a lot for me.
And the rules are so restrictive. It's just, and to the point that it's absurd. And you just think, like, why? I mean, what's interesting is I also, my heart kind of went out to the nasty Taliban boy too. And that was another thing that Cartoon Saloon really, you know, created, you know, in a lot of ways, like, you know, because you leave thinking like, well, you know, everyone is restricted and limited by what, you know. It really, you left the movie feeling like, you know, who are we? What are we?
That was a really brave idea. Yeah. And I'm so pleased that they did it because, you know, it's not really a Hollywood movie, but it's like a Western movie, I guess. One of the things that is a triumph of the film compared to other movies set around this time and around these ideas in this part of the world is it kind of breaks down the barriers of like otherizing people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
exactly,
and
yes.
There are so many like I'm trying to not swear, there are so many damn American movies made set in Afghanistan that just like, you know, play spooky music and have people walking past in niqabs, and it's like,
and that's the problem, and that's what's happening. And not to get political, but that's exactly what's happening in the entire country right now. You know, it's that idea of the other, and that is the problem, and it taps into our lizard brain, and we then act on fear instead of love, basically.
Exactly.
You know, it's like what is guiding thoughts and what is motivating, and that is, you know, that is, you know, sort of. It's the result of extreme versions of, you know, reacting with fear and is shown in the film, but then you also have compassion for everyone in the film.
Yeah.
You know, so then you really you leave wondering, you know, what creates you? Like, what is nature, what is nurture, and where do our stories come and who are we as a species.
Yeah, we see that if I may speak specifically here, we see that in, at least there are two scenes where that particularly jumped out at me, and that was the scene where Pravana and her mom are out and about in the street, and that one guy finds them, and you know they're yelling at each other, he's not letting her talk, and then of course she gets hurt, but he does, you know, you see after you get a, you know, a shot of her on the ground and he's about to walk away, he's like, you know, I'm, you know, you'll get in big trouble if you're out here, you know. And basically, you kind of hear his side of the fact, like, you know, he's doing this because he's scared of getting in trouble.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Well, that scene where they're with the young Taliban boy, and they're like, "You want to be a man? You want to fight?" You
know,
and that was like his sort of like raw moment where you just see that he's just a child.
Who just shot a gun for probably the first time in his life, and after he did that, he's kind of scared of it now. Which it was real. It was very real.
I really
that...
like. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
The one bit that's particularly moving is the bit where she reads the letter for that guy.
Yeah,
because I think, you know, at first you're kind of suspicious of everyone, like all the men basically, because of the way they act, and like you think that he's, you know, you don't want to, basically because she's hiding out in plain sight, you don't want her to get found out. So you're worried, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she reads the story, and you know, you see his humanity or whatever, and then obviously it comes back at the end when he comes through for the, you know, puts himself on the line.
Yeah, puts himself in harm's way to help her out.
I mean, you see the humanity in everyone, like.
Mm.
Pretty much straight away, but you don't trust anyone because of the woman who because of the guy he beats up. Is it Pavana? Pavana's mum in the street, because he is a victim too, in the sense that he is forced to play the role that he's been forced into.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that he's like a safe option.
Right.
He's putting himself before them still. And that's like when I mean when I say like the film really presents a world that isn't safe, because you can put your trust in someone, but like how long is that going to last until they, you know, save their own skin?
Yeah, especially in that kind of like dire situation.
And another way it's like really on Hollywood is the sort of way that it doesn't like spell things out in the really blatant way, like with the brother. There's like references to the older brother who's right. not around anymore, but they at no point do they actually go, well, this is what happened and everyone's very sad. They just they you get little bits here and there, and it's enough to put it together. Which for the audience.
Is, yeah, much more human. I mean, the parents are so distraught from the death of the oldest brother that they can't even bring themselves to talk about it. And then, I mean, the whole secondary tale that interweaves through the main story about, you know, the hero, which I think, now in the film, I'm remembering that he shares the same name as the brother, Solomon, or maybe it was different.
No, you're right.
No, that's right.
He doesn't have a name to begin with, but when Pavana is telling the story to her friend, her friend insists, like, oh, he's got to have a name, doesn't he? And the first name that Pavana comes up for him is her brother's name, her older brother's
name.
Right,
that's right. Okay, that's what I thought. I hadn't jotted that. I jotted it down, but not completely clear. I don't know, my chicken scratch was not as effective for that one.
That's okay, that's all right.
But, writing in
a movie theater can be a little difficult sometimes, or at least that's...
Oh yeah, I totally do it that way too, I waste so much paper. What was I going to say?
Fairy tale, older brother.
The whole, you know, the fact that the hero is chased by something he cannot describe... that was like gut-wrenching too, you know what I mean? It had so much symbolism on so many different levels, and you know, again, if you think about it as more of a, like, cultural mythology, it's like, what is that story, you know, what will happen, you know, in the very end? And it doesn't, you know, tie up nicely at the end of the story. It's kind of like Dan said before, it's messy, and it really just is more of a it's almost like that mirror, as one of the three items the hero uses, becomes, you know, reflects all of humanity in a way, and you know, not just the reflection of the hero. It's sort of like a part of all of us. It's really interesting, you know, the fact that the sort of you know, comments that the hero makes at the end. It's like, what is that for? You know what I mean? And there's a sadness, and you know, he like conquers the Elephant King, but what does he lose? He's, you know, with that sort of, what would you even say? It feels like an incantation, you know, when she's saying, you know, my father is a teacher, my mother is a writer, my sisters always find each other. That's all I remember, because then I died over and over again. And you just think, like, oh, it's like I have chills right now saying that. You know, you know, what is the point of, how does that relate to the story? It doesn't even freaking matter.
No.
You know what I mean? It's
the emotional significance, you pick up on it. The emotional significance of it, you definitely get right away, even if you're not entirely 100% sure how it really, like, how it really fits. Anyone could have a number in terms of interpretations of how it's supposed to fit.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's really important to try and pin it down exactly, because it's everyone who hears the story is going to have a different interpretation.
Right. And the thing is, and it really, I mean, and this is why, and I'm a little stuck on this, because this is kind of the theme. I'll just tell you everything I've written down.
Okay, sure, fine.
But basically, like, you know, in that moment, you know, in a lot of the sort of end portion of the tale where she's weaving it together, sort of the end, and she's doing it to sort of almost soothe herself while she's waiting to see if she's going to see her father, right, or her papa, you know, at all, you know, or if she's going to flee before night falls. You know, she's you know, frantically almost finishing the story, you know what I mean? But again, it almost becomes this incantation. So it's just like, you know, story, you know, it informs, and it soothes us, and it fortifies us, and we use it for celebration. And sometimes, you know, when it's created on the fly like that, it can be, there's almost a magic there, you know.
There is.
Tapping into the spirit of our human spirit.
It was a reflection of the human spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't, like, it's not a story, it's I guess in the cartoon saloon tradition, it's a fairy tale story. It's like one that's heavily colored by myth and magic, and it doesn't make sense. Like in the harsh logical like sense of the word.
Not at all.
Why I think it's perfect. I mean, like, I didn't mean to say the film was messy as like a reflection of like its structure or anything like that.
No, it's perfect. Because
exactly.
On its own is silly. Like, it doesn't make sense, but neither does their situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and in a way, it's more it's you know, you're honoring it more by not attempting to find, you know, either end of the bow and tie it up and go, oh, I've made sense of this now. This is, the story is now complete, because it very much, I mean, like, also because, you know, by its nature, being an adaptation, it's part of a story. Right. It's part of a trilogy. But it's not complete. It's not a complete film. And the fact that, I think I mentioned this when we spoke about the film before, but the fact that it ends exactly the moment it does just makes me more confident of saying, you know, that it is purposefully incomplete. And I love that about it so much.
I mean, and part of it is that it's a trilogy, but at the same time, when you wrap things up, you can walk away from them comfortably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This you cannot, and even the fairy tale in the middle is not, it's not comfortable, you know, and it shouldn't be, you know, and it's really something else.
Though I do want to make a mention of one thing, like, who else enjoyed the part, like, where, of how they handled when she was telling the story to her friend, and then the friend was just kept interjecting different, like, it's like, oh, the thing that was, the scary thing that was chasing him was the horse. This old horse.
Yeah.
That was
But I tell you, you know what's interesting about that is, because I thought about that a little bit too. The thing is, the friend's interjection is another sort of example of what we're talking about, because it may seem like it's totally absurd, but yet that's how he winds up getting the second object.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know what I mean? Like, in the end, like, the horse, you know what I mean? Like, her interjection is part of the reason why he winds up getting the net, you know, which is, like, the second object, the thing that ensnares. Mm-hmm. And it almost becomes sort of a reflection of, like, the importance of friendship, you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit of a stretch, but it
yeah,
you know,
kinda.
You know what else I like? Maybe it's a bit of a stretch, I tend to do that. But, you know, I love doing that. I really like the sense of weather as well, you know, it's part of it was the coloring of the film. It's not like there are a ton of like CG special effects or anything, but you definitely get the sense of dust, you know, like Cabal is a dusty Cabal, and they talk about that a lot in the book, but it was something that I noticed before I read the first little book in the trilogy. It was something I definitely noticed in the film as well. It had to do with the coloring and kind of the softness, but then there was also this use of 3D elements, and I freaking love that when they sort of punctuate films with 3D elements that are a little bit more easy to acknowledge. Like the buildings had a sort of sternness, like immobility to them, and there was a sort of dusty sense of the place. And then, you know, as the film progresses, there's sort of a change in contrast. The characters are brought out, you know, in contrast, the background's a little bit more faded and dustier. And then, you know, the buildings and some of the military vehicles, and then the flames, like all of, and then some of the houses and the structures were all very concrete and immovable and stubborn, and you felt like that, you know, they would not be moved, and that definitely, I think, added to the sense of constriction, or at least what the main characters were sort of up against. But there was also this weather thing. It was just like there's a lot of dust and stuff, but then they would always talk about, you know, rain in the story. It's like there's a line at the end saying something like, Flowers, rain is...
They bloom in the rain, not in thunder. Not
with thunder, right, exactly. Mm. And then also that, you know, the thunder, again, there's another line about thunder and rain in the beginning, saying that, you know, thunders, you know, you think the storm is going to be much worse, and then it winds up with much less rain than you think. Mm-hmm. And which is really interesting to sort of focus on in this dusty environment, you know?
Yeah, because I'm like, you were referencing that, and I'm like, wait, was there a moment in the movie where it rained? Because I don't remember that, but it's like, no, oh no, wait, they were referencing it.
Well, I guess, I guess when you live in a desert, like you mythologize rain in a way that, you know, I guess you wouldn't if you lived.
It's like, it's like dust and rain equates to despair and hope.
All I can think of right now is how, like, oh god, I follow way too many people on Twitter who are from LA, and every single bloody time it rains in LA, everyone tweets about it. Like, they've never seen rain before.
Stuff is falling from the sky, is crying on me.
Yeah, I think it's crazy, actually, you know, the fact is that I didn't think about it, but the film doesn't have, like, a, you know, the muddy problem that it could easily have. It's not, and it doesn't even need the like, cut-out fantasy sequences to make it more colorful. They've kind of found, like, a richness in the environment itself, which could easily be, like, really muddy and brown and everything, to make that kind of, I guess, not pleasant to look at, but interesting to look at.
Yeah, there was difference in the coloration. Obviously, like, there's the color of the setting, but then you have other colors in, like, say, in the scene where, like, you know, the clothes that they might be wearing.
It makes for some beautiful lighting too in the scene when Pavana and her friend go searching for the sweets in like the back alleys. There's this like beautiful like blue sunlight on everything that's quite unique, and it makes it feel like specific to that part of the world or specific to that place.
Yeah,
and the marketplace definitely, becomes a little bit more colorful. I don't know, it's just it's a beautiful film.
Yeah.
Subtle differences in the colors, but enough to make it stand out, which is really impressive, because it's like, normally you think, like, oh, in order to catch the eye, it's got to be really eye-popping, but this film didn't need that. It's just like, no, there's color in it, for sure. Mm-hmm. So it's not all, like you said, the same color, but it's only just enough that it feels like the actual, like, the kind of colors you would see in the actual location.
Yeah, it's same like Yvonne was saying with the acting style. It's like, it's just enough to get the point across. It doesn't hammer anything home too much. You know, it lets you discover each setup, really, you know, with the way that people sort of, you know, avert their gaze or struggle to look at something, and like, you can see these people really thinking and feeling things, and
that
beautiful. It's so easy to like talk about all the other dazzling parts of it that it's easy, you know, to just forget how good the acting is as well.
The animation, the acting is beautiful. I mean, there's so many little moments that, you know, we're just, as usual, so many little moments that you just go, oh well, yeah, great acting. You're like, it's animation, it's beautiful, beautiful animation capturing the most human moments, and terrific. I mean you get a full sense of the character. What was her name? Friends, you know, her whole relationship with her family.
Oh yeah,
and the strain between her. There's just one line, and the rest of it is, you know, like acting about how, you know, I am a good son, my father is not a good father.
Yeah, you see her tense up. Every single time when her family is mentioned, you just see her body language change. And just from how she's standing and turn her facial expression, like, it just immediately, like, changes. Because, you know, thinking back on her family and how much of a bad situation she's in.
Yeah, and she says, you know, like, she sort of breaks out of the whole moment in a way, in a sense of active desperation, when she's like, it brings even more reality to the film, when she's just like, life is not stories, you know. There's like just one line. They definitely really, you know, capture the book and the story in little moments like that, in just little lines.
Yeah.
In short lines.
And. And the relationship with that friend is really good as well, because it doesn't just feel like, hey, this is my friend, Mary Exposition. Yeah. And it's like, oh, yes, here are the rules we have to remember, or anything like that.
Yes, I've seen that character so many
times. Forget.
Don't forget
Paul Reiner.
Make sure you don't find out you're a boy, because shenanigans will happen.
Yeah. You forgot
your
hat.
They don't need to do any of that. They don't need to do any of that. They just...
It just feels
like a real friendship and things like that. And the moment where she recognises her is amazing as well.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Because you're like, oh no, she's going to get found out.
It's a real friendship, but I guess, like, we're in full spoilerville, right?
Oh, yeah. That curtain's been lifted.
I like how it sort of it has not like a limit, but it has an expiration date. Like, there comes a point where it's like, okay, you know, like, it, and that's again when the world feels really brutal, because there's no time for this friend. This friendship was born literally out of necessity, and you know, we gotta keep marching on. And apparently the rest of the books, or at least the second one in the trilogy, is based on Shazia.
Really?
It's about Shazia.
Yeah. I actually read partway into the second one because I couldn't stop, and then I was just like, stop it, Yvonne, stop it. Just, like, work on the actual, like, get your notes together. But seriously, it's a great read. But I haven't seen her brought up yet.
Oh, okay.
So
I'm interested. I was lied to by someone.
But I don't know, maybe she just doesn't come out, like, I didn't get, I only got part of the way through.
It might be the third
really
one.
Really good. There are other characters. There are, like, whole other characters. I mean, I really wonder if they could easily pick up and do a part two and part three.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting for sure. Yeah. But so let me ask.
Do something else.
If I may ask, and just if we can get while we're in the spoiler territory, in terms of the books, from what the ones that you've read so far. What is the scope compared to the movie? What is, like, the scope? Is it, like, the whole events of the first movie, or this movie is in the first book, or is it, like, spread out, or is, like, are the events that we're seeing possibly spread out between the other different installments?
No, it was the first book. It was the first book. There's like another child in the book, and yeah, the baby is a girl, I think. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there are little changes like that. The mother the mother creates a school in the book with a friend of hers, and also kind of falls into a depression. She's helped out of by another woman who is also sort of like a sporty physical education teacher. Which is it's really interesting. There are a lot of really great characters. I mean, it's just a little bit more full. It's, you know, there's more times to really add more characters in a book, so you can kind of maybe do that. I mean, that's part of it, I suppose. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, like, that's the difference between when a film where you have a certain amount of time to tell a complete story, whereas opposed to a book. I mean, you can have as many pages of the story as you want, but it depends, that'll shift the kind of genre or type of story that
and
it is.
Right, and I think that's why I was kind of focusing on the like the fairy tale version, is because it does feel a little bit more simplified to sort of to create a second point. You know what I mean? Like, like there's another message that they're trying to get across, and using the sort of a simplified version of the story as a vehicle for that. And I think it's really effective. But yeah, the books are. Yeah, there are other characters in the books, and the mother and daughter definitely have a stronger, more realistic roles. And the hero is still, she's still, you know, a hero for sure, but she sort of really comes into her own in the second book a little bit more than in the first, honestly.
Okay, gotcha. That's fascinating.
I mean, she still has to do all this stuff, but she's, it's a little bit more realistic. Basically, like you should cut your hair off and be a boy. And she's like, I don't want to cut my hair. You know what I mean? So it's got like very real.
There's some hesitation there.
Yeah, she's just like, I don't want to cut my hair.
Realistic hesitation.
And then, as you know, she realizes that it's, she has no choice, and then she steps up, but they give her a moment to step up. So it's a little bit more realistic within the like sort of adult child dynamic. You know what I mean?
Because gotcha.
She's a young girl.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but I think I prefer, obviously, that's, you know, the way they've done it in the book, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I think I prefer the idea of her making the choice herself, because it gives her more.
Oh yeah,
gives her more agency.
As
they would say.
And there's always there's a lot more bickering and stuff in the book between the older sibling and the younger girl too. You know what I mean? But and all that stuff. I mean, basically, any of those choices, if they had been made differently in the film, could have created an entirely different character. You know what I mean? Like, if she's like putting her foot down, it's like, what the heck would that seem like? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there would have necessarily been enough time, or at least they would have had to sort of revamp a lot of it. You know what I mean? It would have been a different film.
Gotcha.
I think, anyway. Who knows? We should all write a new screenplay. Test it out.
So we've talked quite a bit about this movie. Was there anything else, any, like, you know, points we wanted to make before we move on to the water cooler?
What about the we talked about the animation acting, but what do you think of the voice actors as well? I thought they were really good.
Very excellent.
And,
yes, I agree.
And also, obviously, the casting was completely appropriate, which could teach lessons to some other people.
I want to know who played the little brother, because he was just precious.
I really like that they left a lot of the I don't know what you'd call them, like a few words here and there, and like family honorifics, I think you call them, or family pet names, like untranslated.
Like the papa, the word for papa, I had to like look that
Bulba?
Up.
Bulba, I think is what she called him. And Mama Jean,
yeah, and stuff like that, yeah. That was that was cool. It sort of added like an extra layer of realism to it, I think.
Right, and they didn't just change it. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you could have gone too over the top with the voice acting, but the fact that they didn't was great. And you know, like, to be, I think, like, the in a way it sounds a bit backhanded, you know, the fact that the girl who played Poana carried the whole movie essentially, and she never once got annoying or whiny or preachy or anything. It was very honest performance, and I think that's a compliment to say that I kind of didn't notice. I was completely convinced of her the whole time.
Oh yeah for sure.
And that's the thing, she definitely has a strength of personality and character, and she's rebellious, slightly rebellious too, which is strength, you know, in the situations. Like, she is kind of a warrior. Moala, is that the, I can't remember. Anyway, there's like a mythological heroine. What the heck is her name? But they mention a story in the beginning. Where are my notes? In the beginning about but anyway, she's sort of this hero warrior, and just by virtue of her personality as well, and that really shines through in the books, like especially in the second book, but you know, that definitely comes across in the film. Naturally, right? Yeah, she doesn't have a moment where she's like, "How will I do this?" And then like, and then she's, her sidekick gives her hope.
Her magical sidekick.
Yeah, exactly.
Comes in. It's like, this is how you do it. Like, no, yeah, we don't exactly. need that. Don't need that song. Here.
Pavana and her talking raccoon.
Exactly. That's right. Wow.
By golly, you gotta dress up as a boy.
That's right.
Yeah. he's got a southern accent for some reason.
Why am I all of a sudden thinking of Mulan? My goodness. Oh boy.
Actually, no, there's a thought. The world of dreams and stories was very much separated from the harshness of the real world, and there wasn't, like, you know, seeing your ancestors in the clouds kind of moment. It was
in that sense
it was brutal as well,
right? Except that the stories were almost like, it's almost like the living word, it's almost like the whole, it's like but not like with the Bible stuff, but like, you know, but that's what it, but really, I mean, that's kind of what it was, you know what I mean? The stories became something that are living and thriving and served a utilitarian purpose almost. I mean, in the beginning, you know, her father is a teacher, so he says something in the beginning about how stories teach you that everything changes, and you know, he, in the very beginning, he's teaching her you know, cultural stories, and at this point, you know, the books are restricted, and you know, so sort of passing down stories from generation to generation are what they have left at the moment. You know, in that way, the stories are, they almost become practical applications, and you know,
well, in the way they are. I mean, one of the things that I really enjoyed about that scene in particular, when he's talking about the importance of stories, and then also when we see she's continuing the story, she's telling it to her friend, and her friend's kind of playfully making her own changes into it, it's the fact that stories are, you know, in their own way, they're alive, and that they're always changing. They're always being, you know, people will hear stories, and then when they tell it to the next person, they might, you know, decide to throw something in, or at least, you know, they might interpret the story that they heard in a different way, so that when they tell it to someone else, the person who they tell it to will have a different meaning, and that way the stories are always changing. They're kind of living things that, you know, as they're passed on between different people, constantly evolve.
It's an interesting thought, considering that the restrictions that they're talking about are all based on, like, a religious text that's been interpreted in a different way.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's
fascinating.
Just now. Oh, my goodness.
That's fascinating. I guess it's that thing of, I can't think of anything like it right now, but they serve a purpose, and they too have an expiration date, and they need to be cared for and pruned and reinvented to stay alive,
to make sense in the world that you are now living in, because the world is always changing.
Good. I guess I'm thinking of Book of Mormon in the same like thread of that, Yvonne, like you know, the prescribed story isn't relevant, and you got to make a new one.
Yeah, and that some text, you know, that some text is living and some text is not, and what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and who cares? And the thing is that, like, in the most brutal sense, I think you said it before, Yvonne, like, there's a real absurdity to being so fanatical about, obviously about anything, but about a text, be it religious or political or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
to the point where you're willing to just destroy. I still can't get over the fact that, like, what were women expected to do? Like, if your husband died, would you just starve? Right. Would that be the preferred thing?
Yeah.
It's utterly horrific to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reflects in the movie too, like when near the end with the one guy who was helping out Pavana to get her father, and he was trying to get him out safely, and he's held at gunpoint, and he honestly looks up to the guy who's holding a gunpoint and thinks, "Do you see what's happening here?"
Right.
Yeah, he's like, "Yeah, it's just one guy, like it's just gonna."
And that's the thing, that's the difference too. I mean, and you could hold those two things together. Like, so you have, so say we're talking about cultural stories, and say we're talking about religious stories in that context, and you have, you know, groups of people taking text word for word and holding people's feet to the fire, literally, based on text. And then you have, you know, on the other side of it, and to an absurd degree, to a degree that is hurtful and makes no sense and is self-destructive. And then on the other side, you have, you know, this young girl is creating stories, creating folklore, and creating in a magical way these stories on the fly. And there's something to be said about that contrast.
Yeah, that gives her comfort, that gives, like you said, like it becomes a bit of a mantra. It, now that you've pointed it, you brought attention to it, it is a very interesting, like, idea or that's potentially explored with this film. I mean, not, whether or not that's actually something the film was trying to do in the first place, can't really say, but it is very fascinating to think about.
I'm sure it was a conversation that was had, because it's very much what the film's about.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Man, that's a lot. That's a lot to cover in one film. It's good though. It's great.
Film is amazing.
It's really flipping good. I love it.
Well, like I always think, like the movies that you know you are still cheering on. You know, weeks. I mean, I saw this like a few weeks ago now, and yeah, it's still fresh in my mind. I've only seen it once, and it's still completely fresh in my mind, and I'm still chewing on it.
Yeah, and I'm definitely, as soon as I have the opportunity to get it for myself, I will do so without hesitation, because I feel this is a movie, like, I kind of feel this way, like, my, like films like The Iron Giant and so forth. Like, there are certain films that I've seen that I feel like I have to share with other people, and this is definitely one of those movies. I want to share this with people, to tell them to see, like, to look at this movie and what it's talking about and what it's doing and how it presents a story or a narrative in animation that is, you know, it's with maturity and realism, you know, to a degree, and just, it's, those are the kinds of animated films that I, you know, in a way want to champion and say, you know, more people need to be aware of this thing, of this movie's existence, because it deserves to be recognized for what it did.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Awesome. And that's our discussion on The Breadwinner. Thank you very much for joining us for this episode. And if you're curious about checking out any of our other podcast recordings or episodes, feel free to go ahead and check out our podcast page on the Animation for Adults website. We also have our episodes available via iTunes, podcast.com, and Stitcher. If you're looking to follow the latest in animation news, reviews, and other fun features such as Web Animation Watch and the Watch This Animated Shorts, feel free to go ahead to check out the rest of the website and follow us on our social medias. We are on Facebook, Twitter, at AFA Blog, Tumblr, Pinterest, and Instagram, just to name a few. If you're interested in supporting the website and help us continue to grow our features, by all means, visit our Patreon page. And also, we have an account with a website called Ko-fi, where you can buy us a virtual cup of coffee. So if you ever want to support us, please, you know, send us, even if you can't support us financially, by all means, email us at editors@animationforadults.com. And please let us know your feedback for our podcast episodes and any other features that we have on the website, so we can get your feedback and see what you like, see what you don't like. always interested in hearing everyone, you know, opinions on how we can grow the website. So feel free to send us your feedback. If you want to get in touch with any of us personally, you can find my, you can find me typically on Twitter at Fail2Ninja. Chris, where can we find you?
Mr. Crystal on Twitter and Facebook.
And for Dan, you can find him mostly on Twitter at Hamu. And Yvonne is typically on Twitter is at iSnare_Inc. Apologies. And definitely we'll also make sure that there is a link to her website of Animation Nights New York, or Annie. So if you're interested in submitting your short films, definitely look into that, because it is an awesome, awesome festival and it needs to be supported. All right. That about wraps up today's episode. So hope you all have a wonderful week and we'll see you next time. Take care.
My family is in a desperate situation.
Sorry, child.
Girl, stop when I tell you!
You're Parwana!
Shazia?
When you're a boy, you can go anywhere you like.
I'm going to find Boba.
No, you're not.
I'm going. There's nothing you can do to stop me.
Maybe if we think of it like a story, huh?
Is it a happy story or a sad story?
Wait and see.